Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
9:04 here on The Bench, Lance Erline and Fred Davis. We got another hour to go.
Hey now.
Freddie jumped in here and replacing John Granato.
Just sitting in. There's no replacing a legend. I'm just sitting in.
The show's not going to be on Monday because we're smart people.
It's Labor Day.
We believe that it's Labor Day. And
you'll be on your
not
patio.
As many people are listening. Yeah, I'll be on my patio.
You'll be on your patio.
Other shows are going to be on. They're like, well, we'll work Labor Day and then take off a different day. I'm like,
that's younger guys. That's younger people
that. But explain this to me. So there's not as many people listening on Labor Day, not even remotely as many.
No.
So you want to work that day, but then a day where more people might be listening, you want to take off. Okay. I mean,
they can't all be savvy.
Me and John are grinders.
They can't all be savvy vets. Okay.
We're out there trying to do what's right. You take it off, we're taking it off. You're going to be here, we're going to be here. Am I wrong on that?
I mean, I've worked every Labor Day for all seven years of my career, my radio career.
You did?
Yes.
Well,
because
John
it's always the Monday after
6:10.
College football started. And all the other competition taking the day off because they're corporate holidays.
But here's the thing, who's listening?
You get that first crack at, hey, this is why it matters.
You do get first crack. It's not the largest crack. It's like fighting one of the prelim fights at a UFC. You look out in the stands like, huh, not a whole lot of people here for this one.
You can
one.
Still win Fight of the Night as a prelim.
Yeah, it's prelim.
Oh, look at
you
that.
Can still win Fight of the Night. You could. There's a chance. I mean, you're going to be watching it on
that cashes.
You're watching it on a secondary TV network. You're not buying the pay-per-view buy, but
you're
that's fine.
You're watching on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Okay, so I promised you a little basketball. Here's Tim Bontemps. Who is Tim Bontemps, by the way? Is he NBA Network? Who is that?
I feel like he's an ESPN guy, if I'm not mistaken. I've seen that name.
Aaron, who is Tim Bontemps?
So he reports for ESPN. He's one of their writers.
There you go.
Okay.
He does a lot of stuff with Windhorse and stuff like that.
Okay. Windhorse.
So the over-under for the Rockets in Vegas.
21.5.
25.5. Here is what Tim Bontemps thinks about that number.
Houston, 25.5, McMahon.
I'd probably take under on that. You know, to me,
I
so young.
I definitely think the under because they're going to be playing all these young guys a billion minutes.
A billion? I didn't even know that was possible to play. But that's a lot of time. Tell you what, hope these guys are in shape. Well, a billion minutes.
Even though they're going to be playing
up.
Young guy, here's Tim McMahon talking about the young players could be fun to watch.
Right. I do think that the Rockets will be a fun young team. But fun young teams, you know, tend to end up around 23, 24 wins.
Right.
Yeah, and look,
there's reason to come out and watch them.
Yeah,
we talked about their four first-round picks. They're going to be fun to watch, for sure.
I like their rebuilding direction, which is all I need to understand, that it's, you know, in the early stages of a rebuild. And Jalen Green is going to have some spectacular performance. That aren't winning performances because – you know, he's going to have to be great to keep him in games. And you know, you're counting on 19-year-olds to close games. It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, wins and losses. I mean, look, Eric Gordon, I think, will be traded at some point. John Wall may be traded or...
Boy, you hope so.
Or a buyout, or maybe you just have him on a team, whatever the case may be. As long as he's not a disruptive factor for the young guys...
You don't
need
John Wall on the team at this point.
No, you don't need him on the team.
You never needed
him on the team.
No.
But, okay.
No, you didn't.
So, I have not heard your opinion on this. I'm actually excited about watching a fun young team.
I am too.
I needed a reset. The Harden stuff had just run its course, and Daryl did a great job, but the time had come to make all these changes and moves, so I'm cool with that.
I'm going to go ahead.
Where are you on all that?
You know what? And let me just – shipping off Westbrook and Harden was literally Afghanistan a year ahead of time. Okay. Not to, you know, not to make light of what's just gone on, but think about it. Nobody was going to be happy. It was going to be ugly on the way out. Okay. And you're going to be left picking up the pieces, and hopefully you can rectify something worthwhile moving forward. All right. Because again, Harden wasn't winning a title. Mm-hmm. Okay. Harden wasn't winning a title as the lead dog. Russell Westbrook wasn't leading a title as the lead dog. Okay. I know Tillman Fertitta's got a very gruff style as far as how he goes about doing his business, and you've been in this business long enough to know you don't know what to believe outside of, you know, rumors say this, whispers say this, and you know already that he was hammered by the pandemic, right, money-wise. Mm-hmm. So we get all that.
No question.
But the reality was this. Daryl Morey had done all that he could do, okay? He'd flipped this roster enough times. He'd catered to James Harden long enough. Enough was enough. You had to get rid of this team. Anytime you do a rebuild, especially in the dramatic, abrupt fashion that the Rockets did, there's going to be some ugliness. But I don't know. I mean, Rafael Stone, I didn't know who this dude was before he became the Rockets GM. I don't think for a first-time guy with next to no real-world experience outside of being the assistant, so being the lead dog, if you will, I thought he's done about as good of a job as you could potentially and possibly ask for a guy to lead this team out of the abyss. And again, you're probably only going to win 22, 23, 24 games this year, but like you said, they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. All right, you should fill the stadium most times, okay? Because, again, the one thing you know is these boys are going to go out and they're going to ball and they're going to play fun, loose basketball for 48 minutes.
And I'm cool with that. I went through the rebuilding process with the Astros. That's what I'm saying. Every Rocket fan should be able to look downtown and see the Astros and say, that's right. There's nothing to be – look, James is gone. James was a great player in Houston, was very productive. You know, didn't quite hit the standards that I was looking for in the postseason, but whatever.
No.
He's gone, right? So you have still a bunch of first-round picks that are going to be coming over time. But for me, watching what the Astros did, and I'm not saying the rebuild's going to be the same way, but you got a really exciting young player in Jalen Green.
Yeah.
You've got – and Porter Jr., we'll wait and see what happens. I mean, he's got to become more mature. We'll see what happens with Christian Wood. But I'm here for a new start to Rockets basketball.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with them winning 20-some-odd games if it means they're competing and they're a tough out. And yeah, there's some swagger with the young guys, and you have some games where you Absolutely. Say, man, I can see the potential and the possibility. I can see it. If that happens, I'm fine with it. I know it's going to be a process. It's going to take a rebuild. But you know what? When you rebuild, 15 Astros were exciting. They weren't quite ready in 16. 17, they won a World Series. The process takes a little time, but we could be talking about a really fun Rocket team within 3 years. And the way they're going to have to build, which is through the draft, unlike what Daryl did, which is just – flip pieces for pieces. They were sustaining age. Now you got a chance to be young and sustain a young team.
Yeah,
a sustainable winning organization like the Golden State Warriors, if you can make the right picks.
Well, and let's not get it twisted either. I mean, it also helped too that those guys developed into all pro players too. You know, mm-hmm. and not to mention they knew their roles, right? And that's the thing is that, you know, I don't know that the Golden State Warriors win all those titles without a Draymond Green, okay? Yes, do we know he's not offensively the same guy as a Klay Thompson? And listen, if there's ever been a guy whose value has shot up exponentially since he's been out for 2 years, it's Klay Thompson. Like, we have forgotten just how insane that dude is as an all-around basketball player since he's been gone from the Golden State Warriors. Because I'm sure you did. You watched the play-in game, or not the play-in, but the postseason bubble or whatever the hell it was called.
Right.
Listen, it was, I mean, watching Steph Curry try to win games by himself without anybody else to shoot, you're like, good God, you don't realize what a difference Klay Thompson makes and what a difference maker he is. So, you know, the biggest question is, listen, Christian Wood's not going to be here for the long haul, all right? I mean, and the thing is, you've got pieces that you can flip. Maybe you do flip a Kevin Porter down the line unless he turns into, you know, becomes the Scottie Pippen to you know, what's his name, Jalen Green's Jordan. Who knows? And I'm just throwing out names here, but I'm with you. This is going to be a fun group to watch. I like Steven Silas. He seems to be the kind of guy. He's very A.J. Hinch-ish in the sense that, you know, he's been there. He's been around. He knows what to expect from guys. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's just a matter of, are people going to get behind it? I don't see any reason why they won't.
Even if they don't this year, the long play is down the road.
Oh, it absolutely
you
is.
You win games, people come out.
But Jalen Green doesn't have that. You know, the thing was, like with James, he did have kind of that, you know, there was still, he was very polarizing, right? Because you liked him, but there was still a part about him that you just didn't know, right? Like, is this the dude, right? With Jalen Green, you feel comfortable that he can be that dude. And maybe Kevin Porter can too, but at the very least, like you said, you got a young, dynamic group. Because at the end of the day, if you expect anything more than 25 wins, something's wrong with you.
When we come back, Tom Brady had a very – Aaron sent this to me last night, and it was very, very interesting. What would I tell you if Tom Brady complained about officiating? Does that sound about right for a quarterback or an old school guy?
For TB12? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
When you hear what his complaints are, you're going to be a little bit surprised.
Oh, I know. No. He'll catch you off guard every now and again.
The complaints he has about officiating.
But are
not
you surprised when you come back? Are you? But at the end of the day, you being you, knowing what you know, are you really surprised after what you heard from what he had to say?
Actually, well, maybe I'm not. Maybe but I never not. Even thought I would hear this. So, but the fact that Tom Brady says it, maybe so. And then you have a scouting question for me, which I think is a kind of an interesting one because it's something that we're going to see a lot more of. 9:15 here on the bench, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. You guys want to jump in with me and Freddie D, 713-780-3776, or hit us up on Twitter. And we'll be back in 3 minutes, so keep it right here, ESPN.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I think the one thing about football that's changed over the years, which I think is really hard for someone like me who's played a long time to watch, is like it's not being taught the right way. Like a quarterback should only throw the ball to certain places because your receiver is in danger of getting hit. For example, when I used to play against Ray Lewis, I wouldn't throw the ball to the middle of the field because he'd go after you and he would hit like, and we didn't always have the biggest receivers, but he would hit him and knock him out of the game. And now every hard hit is a penalty on the defense. So I feel like they penalize defensive players for offensive mistakes. So like if a quarterback, I was watching a Chicago Bear game, the quarterback messes up, doesn't see the blitzer. Or the line screws up. I don't know what happened. The quarterback or the line on offense, the defensive player comes in and hits him hard, and they throw a flag on the defense. So they've almost moved the protection of your opponent to you as opposed to where it should be, which is on yourself. Like if you're a quarterback, you got to protect yourself and your players. It shouldn't be the responsibility of your opponent to protect you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real – it creates really bad habits for players because – you feel like I can basically do anything. I could run and not slide. I can throw my receiver into any coverage and not have any repercussion for it. The only thing they're going to do is they're actually going to blame the defensive player for making a good, solid hit. And now the defensive player is going to feel like, oh, I can't do that, even though I feel like it was an offensive mistake. So in the end, I think it's a really disservice to the sport because the sport isn't being played at a high level like I believe that it once was. It's actually deteriorates because you're not teaching the players the reasons and the fundamentals of what the sport should be.
That's Tom Brady on a Tampa Bay Bucks. It was he and Levante David, and I can't remember who the other player was.
I know Mike Evans was on there. Godwin was one of them, too,
who
if I'm not
it
mistaken.
Who was just going, oh, yeah. Somebody was saying, just, oh.
Tell me that as a football guy, okay, right. Being somebody who, I mean, you bleed it as much as anybody.
Right.
Tell me that doesn't get you a little excited and at least give you some solace hearing from the greatest quarterback that ever lived. And I can say that as a Chiefs fan.
You know what he is? I mean, okay, people call him the GOAT. I believe he is. He is.
Absolutely.
That sounds like something that would have been said. I'm not going to say necessarily by Jordan, but maybe by Jordan, because when Jordan got beat up by the Pistons, he just said, okay, I better go lift more weights.
That's it!
He didn't ask for officials to do anything. He just said, I need to go lift more weights and I need to get stronger to withstand this. Tom Brady is like a 1990s NBA player who's old school in that sense, who's physical. That's what he feels like. It's his personality is more, I mean, it's not on you to protect my players. It's on me to protect it. Why are you guys punishing the defense? You would I don't feel like you'd hear any other quarterbacks make that comment, but that's why when something he said at the very end, this is what really catches my eye, maybe because he's kind of throwback.
He's an old school guy, yeah.
And he had a dad who was a baseball player back in the day, so it's one of those things. What caught my ear, I should say, is when Tom Brady made the comment of, I don't believe football's being played at a high level anymore. Now, this is a guy who came into the league in 2000.
Yeah.
So he's been here for two decades. And for him to make the comment, and remember, he had his monster year in what, 06, 07 or 07 year?
Yeah, because he got hurt in 08. Or was it 09? One of those two. But when Randy Moss came in? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's when it was.
Because I remember in 08, he blew out his knee when our boy Bernard Pollard went in and took him out.
For him to say he doesn't think it's like, that's the GOAT, right? He's
been here for 22
decades. Well, I never really thought about it. I just think football's played differently, but I don't see. I think NBA basketball has played, it's different. Everybody in this generation of basketball fans in their 20s will tell you, and some in their 30s will tell you, this is way better. It's way more athletic. It's way this and that. If you've watched a variety of basketball over time, I don't know that today. I think there's phenomenal high-end talent in basketball. I don't know that the level of basketball that's being played is superior to what's been played in the past.
And, no.
But I've never really thought about that with football. I just think it's different. But for Tom Brady to say that, Freddie, that catches my ear. I wonder what he's talking about. And what he's talking about are those little things.
The little things, right? Yeah. Okay, think about that. No, I'm gonna take it a step further. And I know I keep going back to my boy Henry Thomas on this, but obviously he's somebody I talk to a lot.
Dude played.
And he played, right? So you know Cameron Hayward.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Cameron Hayward's been in the league, what, 10, 11 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while.
So Cameron Hayward going into last offseason, they went to like this little deal. They do a little, you know, and of course you know this, they do these like little symposiums where guys get together and work on their craft and stuff like that. That, you know, kind of like that tight end you type thing that they did, but they do it on a smaller scale, right? So Henry goes up there last year and coaches up the Pittsburgh D-line and a bunch of other guys. All right. Henry's been out of the. Henry Thomas, who retired in 2000 with 93 and a half sacks and back in a time when, you know, they didn't rush the quarterback quite like they do now, or they didn't drop back 50 times like they do now. Henry's been out of the league 20 years. Cameron Hayward, going into last season, had been in the league 9 years. All right. Henry Thomas showed Cameron Hayward moves and techniques that this dude had never seen or been shown in 9 years of pro football. And, you know, 3-4 years of college football.
That's crazy.
Okay? So think about that.
And he went with some slappy, like...
Yeah, exactly. This ain't
Cam
some,
Hayward
know, this isn't
played,
some
yeah.
practice squad guy off the Texans. This is a bona fide Pro Bowl, all-pro type dude.
Yeah.
That Henry Thomas, 20 years out of the league, is showing this dude moves. Okay? And that's a... And you can't... Let's look at the Texans. Look at the difference in O-line play. Just through this preseason, than we've seen in the entire Mike
There's no
Devlin.
Question.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a night and day difference.
Coaching can make a big difference, but we're talking about an entire. Like, I still think there's pockets of coaches who do a great job with technique and all that stuff. I think
but
the
you
Tom
said
Brady's
pockets,
point,
though.
Yeah, well, you have to also remember that, you know, this is one thing my dad was very adamant about. He goes, Lance, the more they take away our. Because my dad was known as a big technician, right?
Right.
That's his thing. And he said,
and
the more
to be
they
said
take,
for that.
Yeah. And he said, the more they take practice time away from us, the more the CBA cuts it out, he goes, the less skilled these players are going to be because we just don't have time to school them up because they're not getting taught anymore in college. And it used to be there was a lot more technique work in college.
Yes.
But with everyone going to speed, tempo, everyone going to spread.
Right.
I'm just speaking from an offensive line standpoint, but I'll speak from a quarterback standpoint too. You're in 7-on-7 stuff. All your reads are coming from the sideline. All the calls, they look at the defense, and the sideline makes the call, and then you run the play based on that.
Yeah.
It's been simplified to the point of it's easier for offenses to succeed, but it's made dumber quarterbacks. If
oh,
that
it
makes
absolutely
sense.
Has.
Less intelligent quarterbacks, less skilled offensive linemen. You just got to stay in front of them. Just stay in front of them. We're going to worry about. You don't have to worry about skill as much as we want you to play fast. And it's no different than us with our cell phones. It's the same thing. Do you have phone numbers memorized anymore? None.
I couldn't memorize my daughter. I don't even know my daughter's number.
I don't know. I know my wife's and that's it. I don't know my son's either. But I can still tell you that 232-6551 was mine when I was in third grade. I still know Johnny Harris's was when we did. I guess it was 281. It was just 341-8194. No, that's Mac Jones's. 232-1063 was Johnny Harris's. 232-5465 was Clint Culpepper's. 3386 is Michael Bennett.
3548-9598. That was my grandma's
phone
number.
You know all of them. You know all of them. But now we're stupid. Here's how I type now. Blah, 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 blah. And in my, and whenever, wherever I'm doing an NFL article, blah, 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 blah. All these misspellings, autocorrect. Oh, did you mean this? Yes, yes, yes. Correct, correct, correct. I'm a worse speller now than I've ever been. And I used to be a decent speller.
Yeah.
I don't need to now. It's made me, and it's the same way football has made it. They've dumbed it down so much. Now, it's more efficient. It's much more efficient. But football has been dumbed down, and I think that's what Tom Brady's talking about, is quarterbacks are not taught the little things anymore. You're not taught the little things like how to throw your wide receivers open and how, and maybe it's an instinctive thing for certain guys, but I think when he said that, I started thinking, you know what? Football has really been dumbed down. Maybe this is what Tom Brady's talking about.
I think, though, that also, too, though, it speaks to, you've got that group of guys, the Belichicks, the Andy Reids, the Bruce Arians, who, you know, is finally now getting his, you know, because, you know, people, Bruce Arians was a damn good quarterback, offensive guru, way before Tom Brady showed up, right? I mean, you know, it kind of validated him finally to folks that are, you know, maybe a little not all there as to what Bruce Arians has done, but, you know, I always look back to, listen, he might still be in Indianapolis if they decide to get rid of Chuck Pagano and keep Bruce Arians. Hell, Andrew Luck might still be in the NFL had that been the case. You know, I mean, of course, you know, any butterfly effect type stuff. But I'm with you 110%. I think there's a serious difference when you've got guys, that upper echelon of old school offensive guys versus this newer school. Tell you what, I'm still not sold on Cliff Kingsbury. And he's supposed to be this new school offensive guru.
No.
What's he really done?
How can you be sold on him?
I mean,
He had a losing record at Texas Tech coming into the NFL.
I mean, I don't understand.
That's never the roadmap, but it was done specifically for Kyler Murray, and I get it. But this is a huge year for Cliff.
Well, we got to go to break here soon, so I'm going to try to keep this short. But also, one way I'm looking at it is, yes, Brady's complaining that, hey, you're not teaching it the way I was taught, and I was taught to think things all the way through as a player. But also, wouldn't you say that Brady, that first Super Bowl ring had a lot to do with that defense?
Now that he's up in years
after watching Peyton win the last one, he knows that Father Time is ticking at his door and goes, if I'm gonna win one more, it's gonna be on my defense, and I just have to make sure I don't screw anything up.
Yeah,
he understands and values that. Yeah, when I was in my prime, I could do things that nobody was doing and win. Now I need a defense to be able to go out there and get everything ready.
Yeah, but it doesn't change that he fundamentally believes that football is not being taught the right way, that the level of play has declined, and I think because of it. Yeah. And maybe the scores will go up. Same thing with basketball. The scores will go up, but I don't think that makes basketball more skilled. They just shoot more threes, and they're better shooters. Bottom line is they're being taught to shoot at a much earlier age, and they're much better shooters.
So I'm not even convinced they're better shooters anymore.
You're not?
No. I mean, listen – I'll tell you what, if you told the guys in the 80s, if you told 80s and 90s guys, listen, we're gonna change the game and I want you guys to start shooting more threes, of course they would have done it. I mean, you got to
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, there's no question, but it doesn't change the fact that they didn't shoot threes.
Well,
like, they didn't have the skill
level. Because it was just, I don't know, was it a skill level thing, or was it just because that's just the way basketball was
taught
back then?
Well, it was a bad shot back in the day. It was considered
a bad shot.
I'm a numbers guy, Freddie.
I'm with you.
The numbers guy will tell you.
Analytics, they tell you, yes, a three's better than a two. I get it. But as a sportsman, let me ask you this.
I don't like watching basketball as much as I used to.
Let me tell you something. Real quick. Giannis's whole thing changed when he stopped trying to be Mr. Perimeter.
Yeah, and so
when Giannis decides,
Russell Westbrook, too.
Exactly.
Russell, better player when he does do that.
I'm okay if Steph Curry's dropping threes. I'm okay when James Harden, because that's their game, right? But the thing about Steph Curry that didn't get enough love, when Steph's shot's not working, guess what he does?
Dude, he takes it
to the rack!
He's good in the paint. But he's a three-level scorer. He can finish, he can hit mid-range, and he can hit deep. And James was a level one and level three, three being a three-pointer, level one at the rim. There's not as many three-level shooters anymore, but I'm with you.
Very few.
Don't try to make Ben Simmons into a three-point shooter if he's not, but Ben Simmons has his own issues. I mean, Ben Simmons has his own issues. But I'm kind of with you, though. Everybody doesn't have to be – it doesn't have to always be volume three.
No.
And I understand the math, but this is where analytics turns everything into card counting, where they say, this is what the book says. You just play this. You're just playing blackjack with analytics. You don't have any flow, and you don't have you can't stylistically be different if you only buy into only analytics.
Analytics is one of the most overhyped, overblown aspect of sports in our generation.
I don't know if I agree with you on that.
And I tell you what, you want to save it for the break?
Yeah, let's save it for the break.
We'll save it for the break. I'm going to tell you why when we come back.
We'll do that when we come back. 9:32 here on The Bench, ESPN 97.5. I want to talk about Cars for Kids. CarsForKids.org, they partner with Houston Can Academy. Houston Can Academy is terrific because what they do is help give kids a second chance at an education, at a diploma. And I know you want to help kids have a second opportunity. Now, what do you do to make that happen? You can make a donation right there on the CarsForKids.org page. Or if you have a car or a motorcycle or an RV or SUV, I don't care what it is, that's running or not running, they'll come and they'll haul it off your property. They'll do a title search and transfer. And then they will give you what amounts to a tax write-off. So you are going to be able to write off the car and not the kid. Wouldn't you love to be able to get a tax write-off for that vehicle that's just been sitting on your property and you know it's all jacked up, it doesn't work, you don't think you'll be able to sell it? Well, then donate it to Cars for Kids. CarsForKids.org. That's CarsForKids.org. $50 gift card, Visa gift card, when you mention you heard about it from ESPN 97.5, and you get that tax write-off right off the car and not the kid with CarsForKids.org.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Wheel. Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
9:36 here on The Bench. It's John. It's Lance and...
You keep calling yourself
Davis.
John.
I know.
Hey, it's all right. You're used to
starting
it.
The caffeine wearing off already. That's how that goes. Before we get to what you wanted to talk about, are you keeping track at all with the U.S. men's national team soccer qualifying? You're right there. Right now, they're in World Cup qualifying territory. I love watching.
We've got
the World
a game
Cup.
Today, don't we?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
Canada. Yeah. Last night they tied.
Dude, if we don't beat the Canadians, something's wrong with us.
They tied yesterday against Salvador and.
Uh-oh. Well, our boy Pulisic is out, right?
Yeah, he's out right now. So you've got...
look at me acting like I know names
Pulisic,
and stuff.
But it was close.
That's it, whatever.
Pulisic, whatever.
Whatever. But, he ain't got a nickname yet, so that tells you all you need to know right there.
U.S. plays Canada on Saturday. You really got to win. Like, you can't... If you don't qualify for the Olympics... If you don't qualify for the Olympics
You mean the World Cup? That'd be
now,
2 years in a row we'd be out.
2 years. Well,
two World Cups in a row.
In a row. You'd have to wait 12 years for total before you make it in the World Cup, and that's if you do. And that next one is going to be you're going to have matches that are going to be in the United States, and I believe here in Houston.
Hopefully.
I don't know if it's been settled, but it has not. A lot of people think it's
going to
be
Houston. There's a lot of politicking going on.
So you know what? If you're interested at all, just in the World Cup.
What time's that game?
Just so you know, they've got a qualifying match against Canada on Sunday, 7 o'clock.
Sunday. A.M. or P.M.?
P.M., 7 o'clock. It'll be on TV somewhere.
It's prime time.
You're not watching Sunday
football.
It's probably
on Fox. You're not watching
Sunday pro football. It's not on yet.
No.
Now.
I'll be on the air, though.
Why do you think, what are you going to be on?
Sportsmap, baby.
Oh, yeah, you Sportsmap. When are your shows on?
I just get in where I fit in.
Just whatever you
Craig texts me, can you come in this time? Whatever. I live down the street, so, you know, I'm there.
So you believe analytics is the most overblown thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Thing
okay. Here's the thing about analytics.
Tell me
right? Why. Here, I'll tell you. Do analytics have a place? Yes, okay? Are they good for strategy? Yes. Are they good for building the fringe of your roster? Yes. But think about... I go back to Moneyball, okay? And that whole, you know, and for all you youngins out there, you know, Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball way back when in the early 2000s and, you know, thought, hey, well, you've seen the movie probably with our boy Brad Pitt. They didn't win any championships, all right? That Oakland team never won any, and yes, you found some diamonds in the rough. Absolutely fantastic. You as a scout, you can appreciate that, okay? And so it gave you one more tool in the toolbox that maybe you didn't use before outside of saying, wow, this guy's 6'3", 220, and, you know, hits the ball like a brick you know what. Okay, mm-hmm. Great, yeah. But the idea like analytics in the NBA, all right, and that was whole Daryl Morey's whole thing, right? Analytics. Okay, how many titles did he win? Zero, okay? Last I checked, I don't need analytics to tell me that if I put LeBron and another superstar next to him, I got a good shot at winning a title.
Right.
Okay? I've got a good shot. Here's what I need for analytics. I need two stars, and then I need to build out the rest of my roster. That's what analytics does, is it builds you out the rest of your roster. But the idea that you're going to predicate an entire strategy or an entire philosophy on how I'm going to build my roster is based on analytics is ignorant. Because, again, whether you're an NFL team, okay, outside of Trent Dilfer, every team has had a good defense and a great quarterback.
For the most part.
For the most part, right? Yeah. And you have your outliers, okay? And that's why they're called outliers. NBA-wise, literally the same teams have won for the last 20 years.
Greatest players usually win.
Okay? I mean, sports is not
Hall of Famers win titles.
That's it, man. Yeah.
With the exception of that Pistons team. But that was a while back.
But even if you take that Pistons team, okay, look at it. Chauncey Billups, fringe Hall of Famer.
Rasheed Wallace.
You could Tayshaun argue Prince, is a Hall of Famer. Ben Wallace. Okay, I mean you
Hall
had
of Famer.
Hall of Famer. I mean you had a lot of guys. I mean I know we always look back at that Pistons team and say, well, you know they're the side. That Pistons team was pretty good.
They were built around not having a big three. They were built around having a very good five.
But let me.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you to an extent. I believe that. You have so when I watch a player and evaluate a player, I look at the data because the data will give me some shortcuts on some things and will also give me some things that I might, you know, that I might have a little bias built in because of the first game I watch.
Right.
But then I firmly believe you have to watch the tape. You have to watch football. You can baseball and basketball can be evaluated through the numbers.
I agree.
Because every individual event is a plus or a minus. Every individual trip down the court, every at-bat, all that stuff. In football, it's different. A two-yard gain can be a win based on the front you face. You face an eight-man front. It's late in the game. You're winning by 10. You gain two, and you
and
keep the clock going.
Yeah.
And you stay in front of the sticks a little bit. That's fine. So I think it's different. Here's what I would say, though. I do think that analytics, to create a method of getting to a contract value, is very, very important. I think the idea of saying we have a value of this amount on this player by using data, if it's done the right way, I think that is extremely valuable.
Well, that's a different
deal,
though.
In all three major sports. But that also is team building. But it also is your idea of how you're going to allocate your money.
Right.
How do you get there? Well, you've got to have an idea of what all your players are worth. So there is some... I mean, when I say analytics, I'm taking a very broad approach.
You're talking about it from a front office perspective. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly with that. I'm just strictly talking about the strategy on the field. This idea that this guy shoots, you know, if we go, you know, I remember seeing something way back when, it was a big story when, you know, well, if a guy comes off a right cut and is in this area, you know, 72% of the time, I ain't got time for all that. Either you can knock down shots or you can't.
Don't you want to put your guys in the best chance to succeed?
Right. But absolutely. But here's the thing. If I know Chris Paul is a good mid-range jump shooter, if I know Carmelo Anthony's a good mid-range jump shooter, but my analytics say, well, we... No! You're good at what you're good at. Listen, I'm using an old example here, but you know, Michael Jordan averaged 20 points a game playing 82 games as a 39-year-old. Okay? You realize that year he shot... I think he shot like 83s.
Yeah, okay.
83. So wait a minute. So by 2021 analytics standards, well, MJ, you took too many mid range jumpers. You took too many. You didn't take enough 3-pointers. Really? No.
It does make me. I'll say this. It does make me sad to think about what would the NBA have been. The NBA that I knew and loved.
Yeah.
Watching the Jordan era, the Olajuwon era. Watching the Rockets. And the Rockets were one of the first teams to go with stretch four.
Yeah.
They're one of the first teams to go with an inside out, you know, four out, one in approach with Dream and the kickouts and the threes. And they were knocking down threes to knock out, you know, in that first championship run, the Utah Jazz. But what would have happened? Can you imagine if Michael Jordan just played by a more analytics bent? All those beautiful mid-range stuff.
Be miserable.
Tex winners.
Triangle
offense. You still might see it because what Daryl Morey would tell you is if you're very, very good at the mid-range, we want you to shoot shots where you're very good.
Yeah.
That's what his belief was. That's why they loved Chris Paul is they thought Chris Paul takes shots he's good at shooting. Don't take shots that you're not good at shooting, which, okay, but then why do you have Corey Brewer on the roster? But that's another thing. But it does make me sad to think, man, basketball would not have been, it would not have been as fun
today.
Watching the Detroit Pistons play the Chicago Bulls or the Houston Rockets take on because you know who would have been trivialized would have been Hakeem Olajuwon in the centers. The
centers
don't have a place in the hardcore analytics driven. Not the centers that we knew, not the all-time greats. Not the all-time greats where you feed the post and let them work back to the basket. That is not valued at all in analytics.
Well, and let's listen, I get from a aesthetic standpoint and from a, you know, TV whatever, the idea that, hey, Milwaukee and Phoenix, watching that, just the sound of it is like, oh my God, paint, you know, nail on chalkboard's boring. But that was a fun championship game series to watch. At least I enjoyed it because, you know what? It was throwback. It was watching one man in Giannis impose his will and just basically take two good guys, not great. I mean, they're good to great, but we know that they're not J.Rue and Chris aren't superstars by any means.
No.
But he took two good dudes, put them on his shoulders, and said, let's go win a championship.
And he's not the people's choice. That's what was cool is everyone, he's not from here. He didn't come up from an AAU program. He didn't come up from he's a humble guy.
He's not
a drip fest about everything.
No.
He's just kind of, he's not what people want to get excited about on TV, but the fact is that dude is no different. He's different, but his methodology was very Shaq-ish. I'm going to physically dominate you.
I say he's a perimeter Shaq.
Yeah, I'm going to physically dominate
you. And stop me.
And I'm going to defend. He had some great defensive plays. I'm with you. Like, I enjoyed the finals. I don't know that I still think that, well, that gets back to a conversation I had with Greg Cosell earlier about football, and that there's different ways to win. The idea that everything has to be the free and the three, you know, where it's all free throws and three, the Daryl Morey way, that can win at a high level, but can it win at the highest level? I don't know. The Mike D'Antoni way can win. Can it win at the highest level? But there's different ways to win. There still is.
It's the same way when, you know, you have, that's why you got to have a good running game, right? I mean, you have, you know, I mean, listen, you can throw the ball all day, every day, but at some point, all right, you're going to need to run the rock. You're going to need to get physical. And that's the same thing with NBA. You're exactly right. Yes, you can chuck threes, but there's going to be those days where the jump shot's not falling. They're going to muck it up down low. And can you go facilitate and manufacture buckets?
That's what it gets down to. I'm with you. Totally with you on that. I'm totally with you on that. I don't think analytics is the most overblown thing, but I also think, what do you consider analytics? That's almost the first thing.
That's probably the better question.
What do you consider to be analytics? How do you define it? That's almost the first thing that you have
exactly.
to
Exactly. Because from your standpoint, from a
I still
front
believe
office,
in feel. I, now, I still believe in feel. I still believe that in baseball, you don't just manage like a chimpanzee just hitting the lever because it's just like a blackjack game. I do believe sometimes you got to have a feel for your pitcher on that particular day. These are still humans playing. It's not a video game where everyone's they're always an 86 overall score to start a game. It's not real life.
No.
People have real stuff. They have kids, they have wives, they have girlfriends that they have issues with.
Drama.
Baby mama drama. You have
side chick.
I have a wrist injury that, like, there are things you have to be able to read and maneuver around. But I do believe in giving yourself the best chance to win by using historical data. But I also believe that you've got to have a level of feel for what's going on because these are still humans. They're still, I believe the chemistry is a major thing, and analytics doesn't believe in any emotions. Analytics believes that there's never been an emotion that's ever happened ever in the world, and we're all just binary numbers. We're ones and zeros. No, man, real dudes don't like each other, or dudes really like each other.
Yeah.
Some guys play harder when the other guy's next to them, and some guys won't play as hard because this guy's next to them. That's real life stuff. It's just like you'd be at work.
You know, analytics, I don't know what the analytics say when it comes to, you know, my big question for the Astros real quick going forward in the playoffs is who's going to be that dog on the mound, right? Like, you don't have a Garrett Cole this year. You don't have a Verlander. Who's going to be that dog? I've been saying for a while it's got to be Greinke. All right, some people may say it's got to be McCullers, but at the end of the day, like you said, you talk about feel. Feel for me, Greinke's 37 years old, been there, done that, probably has a little animosity left over from back in 2019 when he should have been taken off.
So you're with Greinke.
All day, every day.
So you ride with Greinke?
All day. Listen, I'm a Kansas – I'm from the Midwest. I watched him come up when he was with the Royals.
Oh, Greinke's your guy with the Royals.
Not to mention, too, since everybody wants to talk about mental health, and I'm all for it, all right, because Lord knows I've had my mental health issues back in the day. This guy was talking about pioneering mental health way before it was the thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Before basketball, baseball, football, anybody was doing it, it was Zach Greinke. So I'm going to ride with my dog number 21 all day, every day. And again, I think when you got to have somebody to ride with, it's got to be Zach.
I believe That's where I'm going to go with who the best are. Like, what Zach did in that World Series game in Game 7, where he wasn't pitching great, and all of a sudden he comes up with that performance, I'm like, dude.
That's what you need. I mean,
this is a guy who has the guts. I just don't know that his stuff is what you want. But if it comes to his turn in rotation, I have some confidence.
Absolutely.
I don't know that I'm sticking him one, because if you stick him one, he's going to get the most starts. And I don't know that I'm ready to stick him one. But I do have a lot of respect for him. Hey, I do want to mention also that my boy, do you ever go to Pete's Fine Meats?
Pete's Fine Meats. I can't say that I have.
But you say you live right down the street.
I live in the Branch, baby. Spring Branch. Okay. You know what time it is.
Richmond and Chimney Rock. I just want to give a quick shout out that Michael, with Labor Day coming and people getting their tailgates
get
on.
Get your grill on.
Yes. My man has Kobe beef, Wagyu. He's got your New York strips. Good. And he'll cut it for you right in front of you. So you want a 2-inch thick cut? You want a thicker?
Yeah.
You want all of your? I like to get the tenderloin tail, which is basically beef tenderloin, but the bottom of it, the tail that's smaller. He'll take those. When he cuts them off, he just vacuum seals it. Those are the best fajitas you can ever hope to have.
Okay.
It's unbelievably tender. So if you get a chance, roll over and see my guy Michael over at Pete's Fine Meats. He also has, like, they do breakfast and lunch. I got to go to physical therapy after this, finish getting my shoulder right. It's pretty much right, though. But I did want to give a shout-out to my man, Michael, over at Pete's Fine Meats.
This is the time to do it, man.
We're going to combine breaks, okay? So we're going to keep going. Let's get Sonny in here right now. He wants to talk about Big 12 realignment. What's up, Sonny?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
Oh, yeah, you going to try to convince us that SMU should be in the Big 12?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't get why they're not being considered. I mean, you look at the past 2 years, Cougs are 7-13, and Sonny Dykes is 17-6. And we've taken it to the Cougs the past 3 years, and or the last two we didn't play last year. But that's no problem for us. We'll settle it this year. We're at Cincy. We're at U of H. UCF's at our house. It's bore on the floor. And let's just say, hey, whoever gets the sausage, they're in the Big 12. Let's go.
Okay, here would be my problems with that.
It's a colorful analogy, but...
Yeah.
It's SMU, though. I mean, with all due respect to Sonny, I mean, maybe I'm old, but I still think of the death penalty.
You know what I'm saying? It's been a while, though, Freddie.
I know.
Well, if you heard, death penalty happened like in the 80s. So, yes.
But that's what I'm
saying.
And
you were super young then,
But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, with SMU, right? Like, what jumps to mind? I mean, what have they won in 30 years?
I'm trying to look up their attendance numbers in 19.
Is Sonny still on the line? Sonny, text into the show. Tell us what SMU's won.
No, he's just telling you they're this.
And look, I get it. And
SMU's been a better football team than Houston the last 3 years. That's great. Here's your problem, though. You don't pull a lot from an attendance standpoint. I'm trying to pull up your numbers in 19.
I
tell you what. Actually, the attendance numbers, maybe not substantially different than Houston, although... Is this paid attendance or people who go through? I don't know. We'd have to see what it is. You're still talking about primarily, when you're at home, you're looking at in the low 20s. I don't think they're known as a sustainable, it's a private school. I don't know that they're looked at as a sustainable football program from a monetary standpoint.
No, they haven't
getting 40,000 in the stands, 35,000, 40,000. They don't have the basketball cachet of University of Houston.
No.
Frankly, I don't know that they have the marketplace. Now, I'd say Dallas Metroplex, okay, that's fine, but...
I almost think Dallas is worse than Houston.
I feel like University of Houston has in Houston, but maybe that argument is just semantics because I live in Houston.
No, I don't think so at all.
But I do know from an attendance standpoint, from a full-on sports standpoint, Houston's ahead of SMU.
Who claims Dallas?
Why would you? Why would you?
Exactly. I mean, come on, man. I mean, say what you want about. I mean, you got H Town. It's H Town. H Time. Whatever. What's Dallas?
Do they call it D Town? Isn't that Detroit? That's not even Dallas.
You know what they call it? Get the hell out of here because there's no reason to be here.
They call it the DF Dub.
You know what? That's how raggedy Dallas is. You don't even have your own town.
I just made that up. I don't know.
You got to throw somebody else in. Okay. Guess what? When you say Houston, it's Houston, done. End of story. Dallas, Fort Worth.
Speaking of getting the hell out of here, that's what we got
to
do.
Freddie, we appreciate you coming in.
Thanks so much. Had a good time. John Granato back on. Well, the show will be back on Tuesday. We'll be back on Tuesday we'll be enjoying our Monday like real solid American citizens.
That's right.
And grilling. People who love barbecue and love taking vacations on Labor Day, because we are going to honor labor on Monday. That's what we're doing. Thanks to Fred. Thanks to Aaron.
Thank you.
Thanks to Mana Martinez. Also to our good friend Greg Cosell. You want me to do one more here? What do you want?
I mean, let's talk about the biggest game in the weekend tomorrow.
U of H Texas
over
Tech.
At NRG, the biggest game that NRG might see this year.
Let's talk about it. Might be University of Houston and Texas Tech. That's what we're talking about for football. It's going to be this Saturday night at NRG Stadium. So we talked about the tailgating and stuff. Why don't you stop by my man Pete's Fine Meats over there at Richmond and Chimney Rock, because he can get you a tailgate pack. And then when you go out to NRG Stadium, you can tailgate out there. The tailgating, they're going to open up at 2 o'clock. Mm. You can come early. They want you to tailgate. They want you to check out the Carbach Love Street Tex Fest on the south side of NRG Stadium, featuring the Cougar Spirit Walk and a live performance by Randall King. Tickets start at just $25. So if you want to get out there and see a high-scoring game between Texas Tech and Houston, why don't you jump out there and take a look and go enjoy football indoors, where it's going to be nice and comfortable. You can go to Ticketmaster.com to get your tickets, and you can make NRG Stadium Cougs house if you're a University of Houston fan. Be part of the 75th celebration of Houston Cougar football. Come early, be loud, and wear red. Get your tickets today at Ticketmaster.com. Go Cougs.
Bye, bitch.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.